It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Podcast, where we feature old-time radio, some of the best stuff, and some rare stuff as well. Well, today's theme is going to be all about spying and excitement, mostly overseas. We're going to start off with a program called Europe Confidential, and a lot of people probably don't know about this because it came on in the 50s after folks started watching television and pretty much gave up the radio. But this show is called Europe Confidential, and it's titled Blackmail Spy Affair.
Presenting the world's greatest mysteries. And now, your host.
This is Basil Rathbone. In drama and fiction, newspaper men are invariably tough, hard-boiled characters. In real life, this is, well, it's not necessarily true, although several newspaper men I've known were as colorful as anything fiction has ever had to offer. Mike, whom you'll meet in a moment, is based on a real person who actually works for the European edition of a famous American newspaper. Not only is the character real, but, many of the stories which Mike tells are also based on fact. The tale you're going to hear today, for instance, you may even recognize from the headlines in your newspaper of, well, not so long ago. In a moment, Mike will introduce you to another mystery solved and signed with his own unmistakable trademark. Europe Confidential.
Presenting Europe Confidential.
Why have they sent you, Mike? Because you are so experienced in espionage?
Well, of course not. That isn't the reason.
Then you know, Mike. You know why people like you are sent on missions like this?
No, I can't say I do.
Because you do not matter at all, that is why. Because they do not care what happens to you one little bit. Because you are, how do you say, expendable.
In a moment, we'll bring you Lionel Merton as Mike Conoy, the Paris correspondent of a famous American newspaper, in another exciting story in our series, Europe Confidential.
I write a column called Europe Confidential for the Paris edition of an American paper. You know, it's a strange thing, but the Army and I never got along very well together. Somehow, I never rose above the rank of private. And maybe it was because the brass hats and I never quite saw eye to eye. Well, this story I want to tell you is about my same old European beat, but switch the clock back a few years, 1943 to be precise, and picture private detention before a certain general, who was about as happy as a nature lover in the wintertime. And the reason for his happiness... Yeah, yours truly.
I don't know why they don't take you out of here and put you behind a newspaper desk. As a soldier, you're about the worst I have in my army.
Well, thank you, General. Nice to have confirmation.
You mean you agree?
No, sir. I mean your officers have been telling me that ever since we hit the English coast.
Trouble with you newspaper guys, you don't know the meaning of discipline.
Sir, I'd like to see you in the city room of the Chronicle making us slow typewriters. You'd be a riot.
I'd like you to remember, I am your commanding officer.
Yes, sir. Would the fact that you don't like me as a soldier have anything to do with the fact that we worked for rival newspapers back home? That I once scooped you on a very important assignment?
Nothing at all. The newspaper business is a long way behind me. The Army's my career now.
Yes, sir.
Now listen. You report to the address on this slip of paper. It's a tailor on Savile Row. The tailor has his instructions. He's to make you 3 suits, including the full suit and fish, and the whole outfit, so it'll be ready in 48 hours.
What?
Wait a minute. It gets worse. You go to the Savoy Hotel. You know where that is?
Yes, sir.
A room is reserved there for you. You'll register as a civilian. For purposes of cutting red tape, you're going to be a civilian.
Oh.
But here are your papers. You'll be taking a trip pretty soon. Yes, we're sending you away from all these bombs. Isn't that awful?
Yes, sir.
I wish we were dropping you by parachute into Bechtel's garden. But as it is, you're going to a nice, cozy, neutral country to have a long visit with a beautiful girl. It's discouraging. I tell you, this whole army is as nutty as a fruitcake. I didn't say that, did I?
No, sir, you didn't.
Yes, the Allied Command is sending you on a holiday, and you're traveling as a civilian with the rank of a full colonel.
That's what I mean about brass. An unfriendly attitude. Unnecessary, I call it. Since we were old newspaper buddies, why couldn't the general have been nice? Well, if he was, I guess he wouldn't have been a general. Of course, if you look at it that way, I was going to have to begin changing my loyalties because, according to my papers, I was part of the brass now myself. I got my new suits, and then they sent me to see a certain Captain Smith. I don't think that was his real name. He was something very high in the hush-hush department. It was all set up for midnight on the right side of Cleopatra's Needle. Oh, I can tell you, the whole thing was very cloak and dagger.
I say, could you give me a light?
We're not supposed to show a light.
That's correct. What was in the bottle?
Jenkins' ear.
Good help. How did Morgan die?
He died at Governor.
Splendid. All the answers perfectly correct. Silly questions, Ron. Silly answers, too, come to think of it. But the silliness makes it easier to remember, I always think.
All right, if you say so, Captain Smith.
Let's get down to cases. We have borrowed you from your people because of your special qualifications. Languages, looks, a certain rather celebrated aptitude for the opposite sex, and a fair share of unmitigated gall. Plus a knowledge of Europe and some of the people you'll be meeting.
Yes, sir.
Don't call me sir. Remember, this isn't the army, not strictly speaking. No, this is another show. What do you think of spying?
Well, I don't know. I never tried.
It's a dirty business, of course. Absolutely filthy. But then it's a profession like anything else.
Yeah, I suppose so.
For one thing, the pay is abominable. That's why so many of the regular pros turn double agent on us. You know what a double agent is, don't you?
Well, yeah, I guess so. An agent who sells out to another power.
Yes. We're on to most of that lot, of course. We use them when we can, but it's always sticky. No doubt about that. Sticky.
Another one of those V-2s.
That was in Chelsea, I'd say. Appalling weapons, aren't they? Guided missiles.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something, because it's going to be part of your job. This V-2 is nothing.
Oh?
Jerry is getting ready with something a great deal worse in the same line. About 10 times worse, according to our information. Yes. Somewhere in Europe, more than 100 feet underground, there's a factory where they're busy perfecting quite a new thing. We have got to stop them. Want to help?
Well, sure, but how?
Your work has to do with an agent of ours working in Istanbul. You didn't ever happen to meet a female named Greenall, did you?
No, I don't think so.
Reddish blonde, sometimes auburn. Grey eyes, rather tall, speaks 8 languages perfectly, 5 or 6 more well enough. She's been a professional agent for more than 15 years. Good at her work, too. Yes, she's been quite valuable to us off and on. This, it appears, is one of the off times.
Oh?
Very much off. She was due to send us something rather important. You know, I gave you a hint about that.
You mean this new rocket factory? Grenall has the information about where it is, and she won't send it.
Worse. She's given us false information. We think the Germans have some sort of hold over her. Blackmail or something beastly. We'd like you to see if you can't get some sort of line on just what it is. We don't really expect you to succeed, but go down and have a try, won't you?
Yeah, but what do I do? Where do I go?
You'll receive sealed instructions when you get on the plane. Details, background, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, but look...
See that car across the way?
Yeah.
It's waiting to take you to the airport. Well, good hunting.
Hey, pilot! Pilot!
Yes?
That doesn't look like the Bosphorus to me.
No, it doesn't at that.
It looks like the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
But don't you know what it says in my instructions?
Oh, mustn't tell that, you know. Those instructions are supposed to be secret.
Well, that's all very well, but I'm under orders to proceed to Istanbul. And here we are in... Well, where are we, anyway?
Well, this flight isn't part of your show at all. We just happen to be carrying you, if you see what I mean. A little out of your way, of course, but there's an awful lot of red tape attached to getting in and out of these neutral countries.
Yeah, but look, my instructions...
Don't worry. There's bound to be someone of our chaps waiting to take you the rest of your journey tomorrow morning. Meanwhile, relax and enjoy Lisbon. We're coming in now.
Oh, so that's where we are.
Yes, better fasten your seatbelt. Wizard Place, Lisbon.
Sure enough, they had me all fixed up for a flight to Turkey in the morning. Well, I wasn't complaining. There weren't any rockets falling on Lisbon, and anyway, it's always been one of my favorite places for having a good time. I checked into the hotel, changed into my new white tie and tails, and took a cab out to the casino at Estoril.
Comment vas-tu?
Genevieve, what are you doing in Lisbon?
Oh, my dear, in this city there are two things we try to avoid. Huh? The first is never, unless it is absolutely necessary, to address a friend by name. After all, you know, one's name may not be one's name anymore.
All right, honey, but what's the second rule?
It is the most strict one. We observe it very carefully.
Yeah, fine, but you can't expect me to obey the law if I don't know it.
You asked me what I was doing in this one.
Oh, that's it.
Sherry, no matter what the provocation, we never, never, under any circumstances, ask each other what we are doing in this one.
Well, I'm perfectly willing to tell you what I'm doing.
Oh, don't bother.
Well, why not? I've got a good job.
Oh?
Yep. I represent the biggest Swedish manufacturers of ball bearings. Tomorrow, I'm going up to Stockholm.
To Stockholm? By way of Istanbul?
You mean you know?
Oh, Sherry, in Lisbon, these days, everyone knows everything about everybody, and no one asks anybody anything.
Oh.
The first is a question of pride, and the second of politesse. Oh, it's very warm in here. Shall we go out on the terrace?
Am I allowed to answer that one, or must I tell you in code? What are we allowed to talk about now?
Oh, why should we talk?
That's true. Why should we?
Ah, it was a nice kiss. You still do that very nicely, Mike, but...
What's the joke?
You're such a terrible spy.
Yeah, I guess I am at that.
Now, listen, Mike. I've always liked you. I am not working for your people, but I know what you are up to. Don't go to Istanbul.
Well, I haven't got any choice, honey, but I think I'd go anyway. You know me, curious as a cat. Why shouldn't I go?
They put you onto something terribly big, Mike. Terribly important.
Well, that's very flattering, isn't it? Tell me, what do you know about a woman called Grinnell?
Oh, she's been an agent a long time. I do not know her, but I've seen her once in Saint Moritz and again in Deauville. Please, Mike, do not go to Istanbul. It is not the woman Grinnell. It is a situation. I tell you, it is too big for an amateur. It is too big for anyone.
Maybe, but well, I'm a lousy soldier. This is more like the old newspaper days. They've at least given me a chance to handle this deal.
And why? Why have they sent you, Mike? Because you are so experienced in espionage?
Well, of course not. That isn't the reason.
Then you know, Mike. You know why people like you are sent on missions like this?
No, I can't say I do.
Because you do not matter at all, that is why. Because they do not care what happens to you one little bit. Because you are, oh, how do you say it? Expendable.
Well, I was on my way and I'd been warned. Promptly at 6 the following morning, we took off from Lisbon Airport and made Istanbul in good time and without incident. Well, when you're on a story assignment and you don't know where to start, what do? That's right, you look up some old friends. Which was why around 11 o'clock that night, once again in the white tie and tails, I made my way to Georgette's, an upholstered sewer masquerading as a nightclub. I left my top hat with a Czech girl and called for the head waiter.
Good evening, sir. You are alone, monsieur? Perhaps I can get mine here at table? Near the floor, senor?
Where's Georgette?
I beg pardon?
Come on, you heard me. Georgette.
Georgette?
Yes, where is he?
There's no one here by that name, sir. Unless possibly you are referring to Monsieur Racine.
I wouldn't know, unless Mr. Racine used to be doing an act on a trapeze dressed like a girl in a blonde wig. Of course, that's a long time ago, in
Sir,
Berlin.
Sir, I have never in all my life traveled outside of Istanbul. I wouldn't
But why all this hocus-pocus and the mystery? Georgette's real name was George Beaton. And why I'm standing here telling you the story of your boss's wife, I don't know. Look, wait a minute. I'll tell you. I hadn't bothered to show you the color of the dough. Here it is. This is for you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Now, please come this way. Through here, sir.
Thanks.
If you will step through the kitchen, sir. Here we are. Excuse me.
Yes, what is it?
There is a gentleman here who says he knows you.
Oh, yes, and who?
Hiya, George.
Mike, well, for Pete's sake.
Don't you think we'd better be alone?
Leave us alone.
Yes.
Well, Mike, it's been a long time.
Yes, it has. You're getting fat, old boy. You're also getting rich.
Not so fat, Mike, and not so rich.
How's the opium racket?
Now, Mike, you know I don't ever monkey with that stuff. You newspaper guys are all the same. Just when a man thinks you're a real pal, you start the old snoop. What are you after?
Information, and I'm willing to pay for it.
With money?
With money. On top market price, too. You know an agent called Grinnell?
Suppose I did.
Who's shaking her down?
Well, who wants to know?
People with the dough, George. 500 English pounds.
I could use it.
All right, Georgie boy, let's get down to cases, eh?
Grinnell, she's a good looker. She has a sister.
Oh, is that it?
Our younger sister called Julie.
Mm-hmm. Where is she now?
She's in Istanbul, too, but she isn't free to move around very much. You might say she's a guest at a certain embassy.
What embassy?
I prefer not to use proper names, Mike.
Yeah, okay, I can guess. The sister's being held in a German embassy. How long do they figure they can keep her?
Your guess is as good as mine, I'd say, for as long as Grinnell herself can deforce the function effectively.
You mean as a double agent?
Of course. She must have got onto something good, and the Germans must be particularly anxious for her not to spill it.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably hoping to use her to lead your people just as far away from the truth as possible, and for as long as possible.
And what happens when Grinnell gets tired of cooperating?
She's very fond of that kid sister.
Yeah, but what happens to her finally? To Julie, I mean. They knock her off, won't they?
Yes, I should think so. Well, Mike, it's been pleasant meeting you. Goodbye.
Yes? What is it?
Miss Grinnell?
What do you want?
I came here to see you about Captain Jenkins.
What about him?
His ear's in a bottle. Also, there's Governor Morgan.
Come in. Come in.
Okay.
No need for all that rigmarole. I know who you are. You used to work on the American Chronicle in Marseille in 37. I met you once in Monte Carlo. Now they've sent you from London. What is your message?
Well, the message is supposed to come from you, Miss Grinnell. There's about 500 RAF planes waiting for the address of a certain rocket factory. The information is past due.
I've always given perfect satisfaction. My
record... Look, save it, honey. Let's cut the whole thing down to facts, eh? Fact one, you know where that rocket factory really is. Fact two, I know where your kid sister really is. And fact three, get me that rocket factory and I'll deliver Julie.
How can you do that? There are over 60 people in the embassy. She's up on the third floor. There are armed guards.
Yes, they're giving a reception, aren't they? Tomorrow night?
Who?
The German embassy, honey. Now, don't go stupid on me. I want an invitation.
But how can I do that?
You can do it. You're working for them, aren't you? They don't know me here. I've got a pocket full of papers to prove I'm an American businessman from Columbus, Ohio, interested in opening a factory. Here's the name. Get me an invitation for that party and get yourself two tickets for Switzerland.
You mean you really think
that... The plane leaves at 4:30 in the morning. Bring all the information on that rocket factory to the airport, and I'll bring Julie. Well, goodbye now. Sorry, but I've got to run.
Where are you going?
Yeah, you'd never guess. I'm going to play pinochle with the chief of the Turkish fire department. Goodbye for now.
Good evening, mein Herr. Mr. Cotton, isn't it? Yeah, I believe that is the name, Mr. Cotton.
Good evening, Mr. Ambassador. Very nice of you to invite me.
It is our pleasure, Mr. Cotton. Sir Chairman Reich is particularly interested in the development of industry.
Yes, indeed.
I would like to put a few questions to you privately, Mr. Cotton. Won't you please step this way?
Well, Mr. Ambassador,
I won't keep you very long.
Well, all right.
Thank you. It is rash to talk serious business in this large public gathering. We will be much quieter in my study.
Yes, I dare say.
Through here.
Hey.
Put up your hands high and keep them there. This gentleman, as you can see, is armed, and this room is quite soundproof. He will not hesitate to use his gun.
Okay. Now what happens?
We will discuss that a bit later. Now I must return to my guests. I will be interested to learn why you were so stupid as to come here. I must say that in my entire diplomatic career, I have never had anything made quite so simple for me. I will return later. Meanwhile, Gerhard here will keep you company.
Well, Gerhard, here we are.
Keep your hands up.
The ambassador says I'm stupid, Gerhard. You agree with him?
Also, Americans are stupid.
You think it would be stupid of me to try and get that gun away from you, Gerhard? Yeah, I suppose it would, but anyway, I'm going to try. Sorry I only got you in the leg, old boy, but I never was much of a shot.
Shrine!
Yeah, what I need today is to practice my marksmanship, and since this is such a nice, soundproof room...
What are you doing?
What'll I try for, Gerhard? An arm or another leg?
No! No!
All right, then. Where's the girl?
What girl?
That was your right hand, wasn't it, Gerhard? You see, my aim's getting better. It's practice that does it. Now, let's try for a foot. Huh?
No! No! She's in there! Screw that door!
Okay, thanks. Julie! Julie!
What do you want?
I'm not one of the Nazis, Julie. You'll have to take my word for it. I'm your sister's friend.
Listen, they're coming.
Yeah, we've just got time. Bolt the door.
It won't do any good. This is the only way out.
There's the window.
No use.
Yeah, the window's locked, isn't it? Here, give me that chair.
I tell you, it's no use.
One, two, three.
I tell you, it's hopeless. There are big gardens on the side of the house. No one will hear. And besides, the embassy guards will be...
They're starting to break down the door. Jump, Julie.
Through the window?
Well, where else, you little fool?
But it's four stories to the ground. I'll be killed.
Jump, Julie. Go on, jump.
Oh, very well. It doesn't matter. Perhaps it's better to die this way.
Oh, shut up and jump. Oh. That's a girl.
Put that gun down.
Look out below, Julie. I'm coming after you.
You wish to kill yourself?
Well, Mr. Ambassador, you told me I was stupid. Auf Wiedersehen. That night, there was seen in the streets of Istanbul one of the strangest sights in the history of that historic city. A procession of firemen bearing two bundles wrapped in canvas rushed out of the German compound and boarded a hook and ladder. Then out of the bundles, which were, of course, firemen's jumping nets, there emerged two figures.
Where to, Mr. Where do we take you?
To the airport and step on it.
I've been reading your report. Very interesting.
Well, thank you, sir.
There's just one thing. Turkey is a neutral country. How did you manage to get all that cooperation from the fire department?
Well, I used persuasion, sir. You'll find it all down on the expense account.
I thought you might like to know, Private, that there was quite an air raid the other night over a certain factory on the Baltic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans won't be making that new rocket, Private. Not for some time, anyway.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, sir.
And I suppose you think we owe the whole thing to you, don't you, Private? Well, we don't.
No, sir.
That air raid was held 3 nights ago when you were in Lisbon.
But
Grenall wasn't the only source of information, not by a long shot. I'm instructed to tell you that the facts we were looking for were sent to us from Portugal, from an agent by the name of Genevieve. However, the Allied Command are very grateful for your help. They've asked me to give you this. Now, wait a minute. Where did I put it? Oh, sometimes I think this isn't a war at all, but a grand convention of lunatics. I didn't say that, did I, Private?
Yeah, no, sir, you didn't.
No, I didn't think I did. Ah, here you are. This is from the Allied Command with their compliments.
Thank you, sir. What is it?
It's an address. They thought you might have lost it. It's that tailor in Savile Row. They want you to return the suits.
Been listening to Lionel Merton as Mike Conoy in another exciting episode in the series Europe Confidential.
This is Basil Rathbone again. As Mike takes the copy out of his typewriter to file his story, our play for today comes to an end. Well, goodbye now till we meet again to listen to another of the world's greatest mysteries.
Sticking with our spy theme for this week, we'll continue with the series Cloak and Dagger. This is called Trojan Horse, and it's from 1950.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS, ordinary citizens, who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Black warfare, espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. Today's story, The Trojan Horse, is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
August 1942. A report to OSS headquarters in Casablanca from Agent Henri Fontaine in France. Contact with girl Gabrielle Monet was made in the Bluebeard Cafe in Paris. I went there alone on the evening of the 15th. I sent her a note with a waiter asking her to come to my table when she'd finished her song. Then I sat and waited. German officers were spread about the room as they were spread about all of occupied France. I wondered what they would say if they knew why I had come.
Mr. Percy is here! Encore, Fräulein, encore!
You send me this note, eh?
Oui, mademoiselle. Will you join me?
Why not? I drink with anyone these days.
What will you add, eh?
What have you? Let me taste from your glass.
It is very bad wine.
Huh? You are right. Oh, the only time a girl may get good wine nowadays is when she drinks with the Boche. Never mind, I'm not thirsty.
I enjoyed your song.
Is that what you wanted to tell me?
I think you are wasting your time here in Paris.
Paris is wasting our time on Paris these days.
I can offer you a better position in Casablanca.
What did you say? Who are you?
My name is Henri Fontaine. I, too, have a good position with the American OSS in North Africa.
What are you saying?
Before the Germans came to France, I was a poor poet. They did me a service. Now I'm a rich spy.
You sit here in a room full of Germans and tell me this? What makes you think I will believe you? What makes you think I won't turn you over to the Germans if I do, huh?
Mademoiselle, I am not such a brave man. Neither am I a fool. We have kept you under observation for months. We know you better than you know yourself. Is there anything you'd like to know about yourself?
What do you want of me?
On our side, we have only the very best. Forgerers, counterfeiters, cutthroats, and spies. Will you join us?
Just tell me what you want me to do.
Agent Henri Fontaine in France to Agent Steve Lytell in Casablanca. Arrangements have been made to transport the girl Gabrielle Monet to the south of France and then to Casablanca. Awaiting further instructions. Over.
Bonjour. The roses will bloom early this year, I think.
Oui, but not too early, I hope.
Good, good. I've been waiting for you. It is dark. I can't see you well. Is the girl with you?
She is here. Gabby, say something so our friend will know you are here.
I am tired.
Did you have difficulty reaching Marseille from Paris?
Not too much. With swarms of displaced persons all over France to mingle with. And a slight bit of help along the way from the underground. It was not too bad.
Good, good. Now follow me. I will take you to the fishing school.
But
I know you're tired. Cheer up, Gabby. You'll have a nice long trip by water to rest up.
Oh?
And then another nice long trip by auto to Casablanca.
Oh, I like automobiles. In the old days, I liked nothing better than a pleasant ride.
But Gabi did not like the automobile trip to Casablanca. It was probably nothing like the old days. I drove up front alone while she was fitted in the trunk of the car behind gasoline drums. There were gunny sacks and a Moroccan rug thrown over her. Across everything, a heavy canvas cover lashed down with just enough air left for her to breathe. We drove that way over rough roads for several hours. When it got dark, I pulled over to a side lane and let her out. Gabby, come out, come out.
Oh, my back. It is broken.
I will gladly massage it for you.
You are too kind.
Not at all.
No, thank you.
Pity.
Why did we stop?
To give you a chance to stretch your legs. And a cigarette, if you want one.
Oh, I would die for one. Give, 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 give.
I have one lit here.
Mille merci.
You see? I try to be gentle. I try to make up for the inconvenience I am causing you.
Ça c'est drôle.
I remember what another poet once said. A German, by the way, but not a Nazi. His name was Goethe.
What did he say?
He said, be gentle with women. Remember, they were made from a broken rib.
I am not amused.
I'm sorry.
You are always smiling. Do you enjoy the war, huh?
I am a poet. There is poetic excitement in being behind the lines, working underground. I enjoy being a spy.
Well, I am no matter how.
You will do.
You still have told me nothing. Why did they send for me?
You remember a German named Paul Vogel?
Paul? What do you know of him? Tell me.
Not now. The time is late.
But I must
know. Throw away your cigarette.
Why did you mention
him? I said later. We have a long journey ahead. If we pass the border post, I will tell you. If we do not, the words and minutes would only be wasted. I thought I would never reach the border. It's been a long trip.
Where are you headed?
Casablanca.
Do you anything to declare?
No, nothing.
Let me see your passport.
Here you are. All of a sudden, I spotted a small black dog sniffing and whining at the trunk of the car where Gabriel was hidden. The customs officer had not noticed him, and I knew I had to find some way to keep him from noticing.
Ah, one becomes stiff after so long a ride.
While he looked over my passport, I went to the rear of the car, picked up the dog by the scruff of the neck, and started to pet him.
Your passport seems to be in order, but what's the matter with Jeff?
Nothing. Perhaps he does not like to be picked up.
No. If he did, he wouldn't try to bite you. Better put him down.
I knew if I put him down, he'd go back to sniffing around that trunk. I felt like strangling that cute little black puppy.
Well, put him down.
I have taken a fancy to him. How do you feel about selling him to me, eh?
Huh? Well, I... You are serious, monsieur?
Oui, I like him. Come, how much, eh?
Oh, take him. There are two more like him around somewhere.
Thank you. He will liven up the journey.
Wait. Huh? Before you go.
Yes?
What is in your trunk?
Huh?
I said, what is in your trunk?
Let me put the dog in the car, and then I will show you. The trunk. I will show you. You see? Gasoline drums.
Yes, I see. Very well. Close the trunk.
I may go?
Of course.
Thank you again for Geoff.
August 27th, 1942. Report to OSS headquarters in Washington from Agent Steve Lightell in Casablanca. Fontaine and the girl arrived. I knew as soon as she walked in that Paul Vogel could not have forgotten her. I only hoped her memories of him weren't too strong. Now, as you know, Miss Monet, this is an international zone. We are, in effect, neutrals. In Casablanca, we pass each other in the streets. Germans, Americans, Vichy, and Free French. You can imagine what a hotbed of international intrigue we have here.
Oh, I know nothing of that kind of intrigue.
Then perhaps we can broaden your horizon.
Hold it, Henri. Now, listen to me, Yebby. The head of the German Armistice Commission in Casablanca is a man named Paul Vogel. Does that name mean anything to you?
We knew each other once, before the war.
Knew each other?
He was an attaché to the German consulate in Paris.
You almost married him once, isn't that so?
That is my business.
I'm afraid we've made it our business. Now, Gabby, we've kept close watch on you these past months, and we're sure that you're no Nazi or Vichy sympathizer.
Oh, I hate them all for what they are doing to France.
But Vogel, what are your feelings toward him?
Well, I haven't seen him in years.
That's not answering my question.
If he is a Nazi, I have no feelings toward him.
All right, then. Now, the open secret here in North Africa is the planned American invasion. The closed secret is where and when. Now, that's what Paul Vogel wants to find out for German headquarters.
Well, I still don't understand what
I... You're to tell him, chérie.
What?
Henri's right. You're to take up this friendship with him once more. Well, give him all the information he wants. You'll get it direct from us.
What?
Now, rest assured it'll be the wrong information. You understand now?
I'm beginning to.
Good. We have a job for you at the Three Lanterns Cafe. Now, starting tomorrow...
Thank you.
Bridget and Henri Fontaine and I were at the Three Lanterns Cafe the next night when Gabrielle opened there. The cafe was packed. But even the crowd around the bar, officers with ribbon chests, waterfront riffraff, and black marketeers, all of them were quiet when she sang. She was wearing a red dress. In the spotlight, her face looked smaller and whiter, and her hair looked blacker. There wasn't a man in the room who could take his eyes off her. I wondered how soon it would be before Paul Vogel came in and saw her, too.
A girl like that could make you forget the war, right, Steve?
I've got a wife back in Syracuse.
Can she wear red like that?
My wife can be trusted. And this girl? She and Vogel were pretty close in the old days.
I know my own kind. She can be trusted.
Well, I hope you're right. The success of the whole American invasion may hinge on it.
A lot depends on how hard Vogel falls for that little bait up there on the bandstand. Steve, Vogel, he's just come in.
That's all I wanted to see. Come on, let's get out of here.
Hey, excuse us, sir. Pardon? Pardon?
This table is free, waiter. It will do.
Oui, Vogel. You wish to see the wine list?
That girl. How long has she been here?
The singer, you mean? She started only tonight.
Tell her to come to this table when she's finished. You understand?
Oui, I understand.
No, you don't. You only think you do. Go tell her what I said. And bring a bottle of your best wine.
And I had no idea it was you, Paul, when the waiter came to me. How like you to walk back into my life so quietly after making so violent an exit.
The world is small after all, Gabby.
I'm amazed to find you in Casablanca.
I can say the same of you. What are you doing here?
I arrived here a few days ago, but I've been in North Africa for months. Tangier, Oran, Tunis, singing.
How were you able to leave France after the occupation?
You should know how well I always got along with Germans.
You don't seem angry with me any longer, Liefchen. After that last time, 6 years ago.
Life is too short to be angry for too long at anyone. Besides, I was a fool to have been jealous of that silly blonde with the bad legs. I've even forgotten her name.
Suzanne.
Uh-huh. I see you have not forgotten.
It's a wine. Gabby, how good it is to be with you again.
How good it is to be with you, Paul.
For you? For me. Now, we will drink to what is to be, Liebchen. You could have no better guide through Casablanca than I, Gabby. Come, what else would you like me to buy you from the marketplace? A scarf, perhaps? A gold scarf to put around your hair, yeah.
Have you taken many girls to the marketplace, huh?
Will you be forever jealous of me, Liebling? What is it, the French in you?
It is the woman in me. I imagine you are in great demand by the women here. The chief of the German Armistice Commission.
How did you know that?
I know more than you think.
Oh?
Would it interest you to know the name of one of the most important American agents in North Africa?
Who?
Steve Lightell.
What do you know of him?
I know him. And he knows the details of the planned American invasion.
Come. I will buy you a gold scarf.
Well, have you nothing to say of what I just told you?
I knew that already. I, too, have agents. However, thank you for telling me. I can promise you more than a gold scarf if you find out additional information for me. Is this possible?
It might be. Very possible.
Hey, J.
Agent Lytell in Casablanca to OSS in Washington. The girl, Gabrielle Monet, has been in the paid employ of the German government here for several weeks, according to our plan, and we'll transmit to them the Dakar cover project.
September 1942. Report to OSS headquarters from Agent Monet. I had a feeling that things were going too smoothly. I seemed to be holding my breath, waiting for something to go wrong. And on the night of the 29th, it did. Paul Vogel was in my room above the cafe. We were listening to my record of our favorite song. You'll have to go soon. It is late.
Forget the time. Who would think it would come to this again, Gabby? After that day in Paris, when we quarreled so.
I remember that day. We showed poor judgment to argue out of doors. It was raining. I got a terrible cold in the nose.
Poor Gabby. Let me kiss that poor nose.
You really must go. But before you do, I have a paper for you in my purse. Dates when high officials will be in Casablanca.
Stay
I get
a
it
moment.
For you.
I want to talk to you.
You're hurting my arm. Let
Germany
me go,
Germany is
Paul.
Paying you well for this information
know,
you are
Paul,
giving us.
Please.
Some of it is useful information, but none of it is as important as I would like.
I will try to do better.
You had better do better. You know what would happen, Gabby, if I found out you were crossing me.
I would not cross you.
It is nothing for me to
my...
twist your arm like this. Such a small arm. Think what I could do if I really tried to hurt you.
You hurt me now because you don't trust me. What do you want?
You claim to know this American like that.
I do.
You claim you get your information from him.
I
is
do.
That all he gives you? What about his love? Does he give you that too?
Paul... The shoe is on the other foot. Now it is you who are jealous. Oh, how foolish. Think, would I lie to you?
Gabby. Oh, Gabby. If you ever lie to me, I would rather see you dead at my feet than standing looking at me and lying. You hear what I say?
Yes. Yes, I hear. I hear.
No more wine. I must keep my head clear to think of what you have just told me.
Now, are you satisfied that I'm earning my money?
Dakar. So the Americans will land in a few weeks at Dakar. Very likely. Very likely. Dakar is strategically important.
It will be more important if the German fleet is there to stop the invasion.
Yeah. That bungled attempt at a landing under de Gaulle's leadership failed. So the Americans probably figure we would not dream that they would try it again in the same place.
One American, Steve Lytell, does not dream you know this. Are you going to tell German headquarters?
But of course, this is something they will want to know.
He believes it, Steve. Every word of it.
Good.
The German fleet is being sent to stop the invasion at Dakar.
Good, Gabby. Good work.
Steve, radio report. Just in from Gibraltar.
What is it?
No. Let me tell it, Geoff. General Clark will rendezvous on October 21st at Point Agreed near Alger.
You know what that means? Final preparations for the Iran invasion. Nothing must go wrong now. Nothing.
No, November 4, 1942. Something very wrong happened. Paul came to my room just before I was ready to go downstairs to the cafe. Paul!
Gabby, your friend, Lytell, has been playing you for a fool. Do you hear what I say?
I don't understand.
The invasion is not the car. I just learned myself it's to be Oran. Oran! And the German fleet, on my suggestion, is waiting in Dakar for nothing.
Paul.
And will continue to wait
for
nothing.
Paul, it can't be.
You know what this will mean to me? Do you realize what the high command will do to me for
this? Please, please, Paul.
I'm ruined.
Perhaps your latest information was wrong about Oran.
No. It all ties in. They, the Americans, wanted me to believe... Gabby, what have you to do with this?
Now what are you saying? I'm getting tired of your suspicions. One day you trust me, the next day you don't.
Your French? What kind of French?
Instead of questions, ask yourself this. Would I betray you, Paul? Not Germany, but you think. Look at me. Look at your Gabby and Arthur.
I... No, of course not. Not you.
You wouldn't dare. There may still be time to stop the Americans at Oran. I must get back to headquarters and let them know by radio. I should have done that right away instead of coming here.
Oh, have a drink first.
No, later. I'll be back.
It will not be easy for you to tell the high command this. A drink will fortify you.
Perhaps you're right. One drink, then.
Paul sat on the edge of the couch, his head in his hands. I remember thinking how very blonde was his hair, how large his eyes. It was not difficult for me to drop half the L tablet from my purse into his glass as I poured the liquor over it. Here you are. Poor Paul. Pauvre petit. You look so tired. Drink.
Where are you going?
To put on the record you like. We played it so often lately, Paul, that one of these days it will just rise up in protest. You're tired?
No. No, why should I be tired? I must. I've had my drink.
Hear my record through, then you will go.
No. No, now. I must go now. You're so good to me, Gabby. You love me. You love me very much.
His head had fallen on his arms and rested on the table. The tablet had begun to work as I knew it would. I got the automatic pistol that had been given to me by the Americans and shot him twice through his very blonde head. Mon amour. Report from Agent Gabriel Monet. Mon amour. Fini. Mon
amour. Well, it ought to come any minute now, news of the invasion. I've had word that Eisenhower and Clark were in Gibraltar on November the 8th. I'll let you both know as soon as something comes through on the radio.
Are you all right, Debbie?
Me? Don't concern yourself.
You did what you had to do. It took courage.
Well, if I had thought about it longer, perhaps I would not have had the courage. You cannot know.
I think I do.
He meant a great deal to me. A long time ago. I killed him.
Listen to me. I told you something once that the poet Goethe said. He also said this. Give up what perished long ago, and let us love what's living. Do you hear, Gabby? Do you hear?
Écoutez, Yankee, Franklin, Midway, Lincoln, Robert, Harry. Robert, Harry.
That's the code name. Robert's arrived. The invasion's begun. Do you hear?
Did you hear, Gabby? Did you?
Yes. Yes, I heard.
And
report of an OSS agent is closed with the words...
Mission accomplished.
A further adventure in black warfare is next week.
Cloak and Dagger.
Heard in today's story were Jane White, Barry Kruger, Leon Janney, Joseph Julian, Carl Weber, Raymond Edward Johnson, Guy Sorrell, and Bernie Gould. Script was by Winifred Wolfe. Music under the direction of John Gart. Today's true OSS adventure was based on the book Cloak and Dagger by Corey Ford and Alistair McBain. This has been a Lewis G. Cowan production under the supervision and direction of Sherman Marks. Stay tuned for the second big mystery, High Adventure, on NBC.
Well, that's about an hour's worth of spying going on for us with some adaptations of true stories. So it's time for a little comedy. Let's go at it with Duffy's Tavern. This time, Duffy has a cultural singing contest going on in the tavern, and it should be good listening. So back to 1951 for Duffy's Tavern.
That's my boy.
Quiet, everybody. Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where you'll eat meat, eat. Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Guess what we just had? A new customer. Yeah, a sweet little old lady. But I'm proud to say that this liquor of ours does something to people, Duffy. That sweet little old lady walked out of here, yelled yahoo, and helped two Boy Scouts across the street. Yeah. Huh? Well, you know, they're not all old ladies that come in here. In fact, tonight I'm expecting my new girlfriend, Josita, the cute little tamale from South America. The chili billy, you know. You should get a load of it, Duffy. A real cute little armful. Huh? Last night we went to a symphony at Carnegie's Hall. A symphony. It's a Greek word, you know. Sort of a contraption. Sim meaning music, and if you can figure out what phony means, that's it. Huh? Well, you know, for a symphony, it was pretty good. Yeah, horrible. Well, I'm going to check to see what the critics have to say about it in the paper. I'll call you back. Hey, Fats.
Yes, sir.
Fats, how do you feel about classical music?
Classical music? Let me put it this way.
What way?
It will never replace the good old Chinese water torture.
Fats, I think I agree with you.
In that case, how come you was hooked into going?
Well, I was tricked. I thought it was a Polish wrestling match.
What made you think that?
The sign out in front. I thought the sign said Tristram Vasis sold it.
Well, Mr. Archer, if it was so bad, why didn't you get up and leave?
Well, somebody had to sit there and give him a raspberry.
You gave them the raspberry?
Yeah.
Out loud?
Yeah, only, of course, when they hit the wrong notes.
How'd you know when they hit the wrong notes?
I didn't, so I played it safe. I gave them the raspberry on everything. Fats, get that paper over there. I can hardly wait to see how the critics panned it. What does it say?
Let's see. Impeccable technique. The quintessence of dynamic interpretation.
I told you it stunk.
The epitome of virtuosity.
The epitome of virtuosity? It's even worse than I thought.
Mr. Archer.
What?
I got news for you.
What?
They liked it.
They liked it? Well, that's a pretty sneaky way to say so. This is the last time I read the music section in Third Avenue Gazette. Hey, wait a minute. What's that next column is? It says, Local Song Fest. Mrs. Abigail Piddleton will hold the finals for this year's Miss Golden Throat of Third Avenue contest at Beethoven's Hall. Beethoven's Hall? What a dirty trick. Last year she held it at Duffy's Tavern.
That's a dirtier trick.
Give me that phone. Hello? Hello, Mrs. Pendleton? This is Archie. Look, I understand that you ladies is holding your singing contest in Beethoven's Hall. But, Mrs. Pendleton, that Beethoven's Hall is nothing but a crummy, filthy, dirty fire trap. For half the money, you can get the same thing right here. Look, Abigail, leave us not twiddle. Why don't you drop down to the tavern and you and me can talk it over a fifth of tea. Huh? You'll be right down? Good.
Well, Archie, my dear boy.
Well, Mrs. Pendleton.
Once again, we two disciples of culture meet on a sphere of rhapsodic affinity.
Yep. Ain't it the nuts? Now, look, Abigail, what's the idea of yous dames throwing a singing contest at Beethoven's Hall instead of Duffy's Tavern?
Well, Archie, for one thing, the singers seem to object to your acoustics.
So what? We'll set traps. Now, what other objections is there?
Well, to speak frankly, the atmosphere here is so unrefined.
That's a stinking canard. The atmosphere ain't unrefined.
Well, of course, I don't include you.
Well, I hope not with me. Culture is a thing of long standing. It's a habit, you know, like with some people it's taking baths. You know something?
What?
Last night, I went to a symphony concert at Carnegie's Hall.
Really? I was there, too.
You was?
Yes. And did you hear that ruffian?
Which ruffian?
Why, that disgusting one that was making those uncouth noises.
Them raspberries? Oh, yes, he reviled me no end. In fact, I was tempted to trash the cad with me lorgnette. I was positively disgusted.
Yes, imagine. Interrupting that divine music 4 times.
8 times. I mean, leave us get back to business, Abigail. I use dames arrangers gonna hold a singing contest here.
I can't, Archie. I've made other arrangements.
Oh, this is going to come as quite a shock to Deems Taylor.
Deems Taylor? The famous music critic?
I was planning to have him judge the contest.
You mean that you could get Deems Taylor to come here to Duffy's Tavern?
Mrs. Pendleton, you hold that music contest here tonight, and I'll promise you that Deems Taylor will judge it.
Well, Archie, that's a bargain.
And a bargain's a bargain.
Oh, well, in that case, I think I'll toddle along and notify the girls. Au revoir, kindred spirit.
So long, kid. Keep a stiff upper plate. Well, Fats, it looks like the tavern will be loaded with culture bugs tonight. And there's nothing buggier than a culture bug.
Hello, Art.
Maybe I'm wrong. Hiya, Finnegan. Hey, you look very happy.
Oh, I am, Art.
How come?
Well, I went to a psychiatrist.
And that made you happy?
Yeah. You know what he told me?
What?
He says, I don't have an inferiority complex at all.
No inferiority complex?
No. He says that in my case, I'm really inferior.
Well, that must be a load off your mind.
Oh, it is a load off of my mind. I used to worry about it, but now I can concentrate on me work.
What work?
Selling Christmas cards.
Finnegan, ain't it a little early to be selling Christmas cards?
Arch, these are last year's cards.
Well, tell me, are you having any luck?
Oh, yeah. I sold quite a few today.
Yeah. How many did you sell?
3.
This is quite a few.
It is to a guy who can only count up to 4.
Well, tell me, Finnegan, how do you go about selling these cards? You go door to door?
No, house to house.
Explain that one, will you?
Well, first I look for a house.
Yeah?
Then I look for a door.
Uh-huh.
Then I knock at it.
Yes?
Then when they open it, I stand there and I say, I am Clifton Finnegan. Uh-huh.
And then what?
Then I knock on the door again.
Finnegan, I'm afraid you're not using your head.
Oh, no? What do you think I knock on the door with?
Look, old man, I don't want to criticize your sales technique, but maybe I can help you. Now, leave us presupposed that I'm a housewife, huh?
Okay.
Now, you knock on the door.
Okay. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Good evening, madam.
Oh, good evening.
Is your husband home?
Well, no, he's not.
May I come in?
Well, maybe just for a minute.
Thanks. Shall we go in this room?
Well, very well.
Oh, boy. You mind if we sit on the sofa and turn out the lights?
Whatever for?
I got a Christmas card here that lights up in the dark.
Finnegan, you got it all backwards.
You mean I should find a dame that gets lit up in the dark?
Well, I think you better play a return match with that psychiatrist.
Hey, Archie.
Yeah, Miss Duffy.
Have you heard the news?
What news?
I'm singing in the contest here tonight.
Oh, that's nice. Which contest? The Amalgamated Hog Callers?
No, Mrs. Piddleton's contest.
Well, I wasn't too far off. Now, look, Miss Duffy, you stay out of that contest. I remember the last time you sang in public. They sent 15 tugboats into the harbor looking for the Queen Mary.
Oh, is that so? Well, my singing teacher don't think so.
Your singing teacher?
Yes. Yasha Panyaslavnik, the founder of the Panyaslavnik vocal method.
The Panyaslavnik vocal method?
If you have 2 lungs and $4, he can teach you to sing.
4 bucks is too much for that bum.
That's for his A method.
Oh, his A method.
Yes, his B method is only 50 cents.
Uh-huh. What's the difference?
With the B method, his hearing aid is turned off.
Born musician. And this is the guy that coached you for the contest?
Yes, and he has great confidence in me. He says I have the most powerful voice on 3rd Avenue.
Powerful, huh?
Yes. He says that Mrs. Fishbeck's voice broke his mirror, and that Mrs. Schultz's voice broke 3 of his windows.
And what did you do to Panyaslavnik?
I hit a high C and I put a crack straight across his glass eye.
Well, Miss Duffy, you know, I always feel that true professional talent should be given a chance to express itself. Hey, look who's coming in. My little Spanish girlfriend, Josita. Fats, do I look okay?
You wearing a red necktie?
No.
Then put your tongue back in your mouth.
Well, I'm glad to see you, Josita.
Hello, Archie.
Well, honey, now that you're here... How about you and me?
How about you and me what?
You name it. But where's my hospitality? May I offer you some food, drink, marriage?
Archie, I am only interested in my career as a singer.
Well, I'll tell you, Mrs. Pilton's music club is holding a musical here tonight.
A musical?
Yeah, you know, a tug of war with tonsils. Honey, tell you what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to get you into that contest, and I'm sure the judge is going to pick you.
Yeah, but how can you be sure?
Because I'm going to pick the judge.
But Archie, if I'm just starting off on my career, I don't want to be dishonest.
You won't have to be, honey. I'll get you an agent to be dishonest for you. Now, let me see. I better call up the judge.
Why?
Well, I want to make sure the contest is fixed on a level. Hello? His name's Taylor there. He's listening to a symphony. We'll wake him up. Hello. Deems, this is Archie from Duffy's Tavern. Remember? Hello?
Looks like you remembered.
Yeah. Well, maybe I better dig up a dummy judge.
I ought.
Finnegan, just the man I'm looking for. I want you to judge a contest.
Honest?
Well, not exactly. You see, James Taylor just backed out of judging his singing contest for Mrs. Piddleton.
I can be James Taylor.
Hardly. James Taylor is a person. Wait a minute. I got it.
Yeah.
You better say that you're a German professor.
German professor, you know?
Professor Liederkranz. Hmm. Professor Liederkranz from Heidelberg.
The famous eye, ear, and music authority.
Yeah, that's it. Now, Finnegan, you got it? You'll be the judge, only I'll tell you what to judge.
I got it. I'm a German Liederkranz named James Heidelberg with eye, ear, and music trouble.
This ain't all your trouble. Look, Finnegan, just remember one thing.
What's that?
We're holding a singing contest.
Oh, I see.
And the winner is Josita.
Short contest, wasn't it?
Short contest. Now, tell me, will you do it for me as a friend?
Just a second, Arch. Wait a minute. What? If I fix this contest for you, do I get a brand new yo-yo?
Well, it depends. How much is a brand new yo-yo?
Oh, buck and a half.
Buck and a half? Finnegan, how much do you think our friendship is worth?
Well, Arch, it's worth a fortune.
So you're going to give up a fortune for a lousy buck and a half yo-yo?
Well, I'm sorry, Arch.
Okay, now in that case, you do it for nothing. Yeah. And don't forget, Josita is the winner.
I got it.
Good. Mr. Archie.
What, Vance?
Was he expecting a Notre Dame backfield?
Well, no.
In that case, Mrs. Piddleton and the Singing Society is here.
Oh, well. Wait, ladies, welcome. Fats, the champagne.
What about it?
Lock it up.
Archie, are you insinuating that the ladies are tipplers?
Oh, perish forbid that I say that they tipple. I merely infer that once in a while they are inclined to dip the beak. But leave us get the contest started. Is the singers all ready?
Yes, and they're all so thrilled. Especially our new protege.
Who's your new protege?
Miss Duffy.
Ah! Gazooks!
And you should hear her, Archie. She sings like a bird.
A vulture.
Archie, she's a very talented girl. Do you know what she's devoted her entire life to?
Sailors.
No, singing. She has a glorious voice. And, Archie.
Huh?
I wonder if you'd do me a favor.
Yeah.
You see, well, Miss Duffy is our favorite.
Uh-huh.
And Archie, come here.
Yeah.
Could the contest be fixed?
What?
I mean, could it be arranged?
Are you suggesting arson?
Well, Archie.
I am taking a guest. How could you stoop so low? I'll have you know that I'm conducting an honest, legitimate contest. And I will brook no finagling. Besides, our honorable judge, Professor Liederkranz, would be shocked beyond reprisal.
Professor Liederkranz? But you promised us Deems Taylor.
Deems met with an accident.
An accident?
Yep, he was at a rehearsal and he got crushed between two sopranos.
Archie!
Now, Abigail, don't blow your wig. I got somebody better than Deems Taylor.
Who?
I'll have you meet him. Oh, Professor Liederkranz. Professor Liederkranz.
Auf Wiedersehen. Was ist cooking?
Professor Liederkranz, this is Mrs. Piddleton.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Last guy in the world you think is a professor, ain't he?
He certainly is.
Uh-huh, but he fools you. I'll show you. Professor, what do you think is the trend in modern music?
Gesundheit.
Well, there's two schools of thought on that.
Archie, I would like to ask a question.
Does it require an answer?
Of course.
Then we're in trouble.
Herr Professor.
Ja, mein Dummkopf.
Name three famous German composers.
Eins, zwei, drei.
Archie.
That's the trouble with music, Mrs. Piddleton. Too often we suffer from this language barrier.
I have one more question. Professor, listen to this. Did you hear that?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell me what it is?
Yeah, a piano.
And you thought he was a phony. Now, come on, leave us start the contest here. Ladies of the Music Society, tonight, in these immoral halls, we clasp hands with the classics. They say that music hath charms to soothe the savage beasts. So I'm sure you ladies will have a good time. Thank you. And now, before I introduce the charming and lovely Josita, I would like to present the judge of this contest, Professor Liederkranz.
The winner is Josita.
Phineas. Please, the contest ain't started yet.
Oh, excuse it, please.
Mrs. Piddleton, outside of Josita and Miss Duffy, how many singers do we have to listen to?
Seven.
Seven? Fats, mix me a bromo, just in case. Thank you, ladies. You have just heard Mrs. Horace Bodkin render the ever-popular Ride of the Valkyries. Written, of course, as you all know, by Schumann and Heink. Now, that was contestant number seven. And now we present our last two contestants. Miss Josita Hernandez, contralto, and Miss Duffy, middleweight. Now, first, we will hear from Josita.
The winner!
Professor! Please, leave her sing first, and then we pick her. Go ahead, Josita.
Canta, canta, pajarito, que tu cantar me alegra el corazón. Chiu, 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 canta, canta, pajarito, que tu cantar me alegra el corazón. Con tu gorjeo y tu trinar se alegra el alba, la noche ya se va. Con tu gorjeo y tu trinar se alegra el alba, la noche ya se va.
Terrific.
Wunderbar, wunderbar. The winner is...
Not yet, Finnegan. Well, Mrs. Piddleton, shall we barter with the last contestant, or do you want to call it quits?
Archie, I demand that Miss Duffy be given a chance to compete.
All right, it might be good for laughs. Folks, we have just heard the beautiful, gorgeous Josita. The vivacious Josita. The charming, talented Josita. And now, Miss Duffy.
Hello, hear the gentle lark, weary of rest. From his moist cabinet, mouth up, mud, ha, as wakes morning from whose
music! Stop the music! Stop the music!
Stop it! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, the winner is Miss Duffy.
Finnegan, you double-crossed me. You were supposed to pick Josita, and you... Hey, what's that you got there in your hand?
It's a yo-yo.
Yes, Archie. A brand new one.
He gets stabbed in the back by a yo-yo.
That's all the program we have for this week, but we'll be back next week with some more great old-time radio, and I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.